From the University of Leicester in the United Kingdom, this is Glenn Fulcher with another issue of Language Testing Bites. Issue 32.3 of Language Testing this year is a special issue on the subject of diagnostic language testing. For as long as I can remember, language testing textbooks refer to diagnostic tests as one of the five types of language test. They then proceed to ignore it almost completely. But in recent years, there has been a real surge in interest and research in diagnostic testing. Now, one researcher who has focused on diagnostic testing is Dr. Eunice Jiang from the University of Toronto, and she's a contributor to this special issue. We're delighted that she's agreed to talk to us about this really important field of study. Welcome to Language Testing Bites, and thanks for agreeing to share something of your expertise with our listeners.
Thank you so much, Glenn, for the opportunity. My pleasure to talk with you today.
Now, just to make things very clear for our listeners, can we start out by asking you to provide us with a definition of diagnostic language assessment?
Oh, I must confess I'm not a big fan of definition, but let me take a stab at it. I see it as an assessment approach used to provide detailed information about the areas of strength and further improvement in user-specified language domain. While such diagnostic information actually can serve both teachers and students, its primacy is on learners who are the change agents of their own language learning. Misdiagnosis resulting in mistargeted treatment versus correct diagnosis without actionable plans can be equally problematic, and both precision and actions for improvement are the core features that define high-quality diagnostic assessment.
Okay, so now that's clear for everyone, let's start to explore the topic in a little bit of detail. In the introduction, I mentioned the traditional five types of language test. The two that are routinely neglected are aptitude testing and diagnostic assessment. Can you tell us why there has been such a huge interest in diagnostic assessment in recent years? I mean, what's driving all this new thinking and research?
This is a great question. Although clinical and psychological diagnostic measurement has a long standing in the modern measurement history, diagnostic language assessment is relatively a recent development. I can think of three main driving forces underlying its current popularity. First of all, it has drawn much attention for the past 15 years, and in my observation, this period coincides with neoliberal educational reforms based on economic models of accountability. A prime example of such is the No Child Left Behind Act of 2001, which was a testing-driven educational reform for school improvement based on early adequate progress for all students. Recent political interest prompted a new test form that assesses and tracks student growth and intervene learning more effectively. Developing a high-quality diagnostic assessment is a serious endeavor in terms of its requirement for financial and professional resources. Whether it accidentally coincided with such reform movements, well, I'm not so sure, and nor is entirely desirable. But it appears that political climates provided a testbed for fertilizing diagnostic assessment. Another critical contributor is a significant shift to interest in assessing skills that enable application of knowledge to tasks beyond assessment of discrete knowledge. The shift from assessment of how much a student knows to what student can actually do with that knowledge reflects the societal, public, and policy interest in preparing learners to be competent in the 21st century. However, not all diagnostic assessment may focus on skills over knowledge, and I remain keen on ongoing dialogues about that matter. Lastly, probably the most important contributor is a conceptual shift to pragmatism, that is a recognition that assessment is a means to educational goal, which is essentially learning. This renewed interest calls for assessment that allows systematic documentation of evidence of growth in target domains. And it is well reflected in effects-driven assessment design by Drs. Fred Davison and Glenn Fulcher and user-oriented test validation by Dr. Beckman. I think all these aforementioned factors, including political, conceptual, and pedagogical shifts, contributed to creating a sort of tipping point for diagnostic assessment, as Malcolm Gladwell might say.
So, in your own research, you make it clear that you're interested in the use of test scores, or perhaps more specifically, the outcomes of assessments, for the improvement of learning. In the United Kingdom in particular, this isn't something new. The concept of assessment for learning, or AFL, has been around for quite a long time, and the work of researchers like Black and William have become standard texts for trainee teachers. In what way does your approach to diagnostic assessment, as outlined in your contribution to the special issue, differ from what we traditionally think of as AFL?
There is no doubt that assessment for learning, along with assessment as learning, has changed the landscape of today's assessment and pedagogical practice. In particular, AFL provided a framework of reference for teachers and educators in communicating their daily practice with other stakeholders. Through AFL, I think teachers experience some conceptual empowerment and professionalization to some extent. AFL indeed opened a quote-unquote the black box of education, which is what goes into education instead of focusing entirely on what comes out of education. However, AFL is a rather conceptual framework that articulates the role of assessment in its broadest sense. Diagnostic assessment definitely is an AFL, but not all assessments used for AFL are necessarily diagnostic assessment. There is a diagnostic assessment tool, but we don't say there is an AFL tool. So diagnostic assessment is a specific type of AFL that features a set of principles in terms of theories of specific skill development and test characteristics, scoring, and communication. In the paper published in the special issue, we focus on the last component, which is diagnostic feedback, the end result of diagnostic assessment in the form of communication and actions. Information that is shared, negotiated, and used by learners should be specific enough in terms of target skills being assessed and age appropriate in terms of grain size, and should be based on cognitively engineered and diagnostically sensitive language tasks. We learned that how such diagnostic feedback is perceived, processed internally, and used for future learning depends on a constellation of various cognitive, psychological, and affective characteristics of learners, as well as family and classroom environments therein. This reminds us of the complexity of the human mind, a need to take into account dynamic interplays between cognitive and non-cognitive traits.
I'd like to ask a very specific question at this stage, if you don't mind. In recent literature, I've noticed that there is a tendency to try to retrofit existing proficiency tests with diagnostic information. And I suspect this is what fusion theory was all about. And you've written about this previously in language testing. Where do you stand now on this issue? I mean, do you think we can get diagnostic information from traditional proficiency tests? Or do we have to design diagnostic tests with the diagnostic purpose in mind?
Let me give listeners a quick summary of what you referred to in your question. My dissertation examined the validity of diagnostic assessment practice based on the retrofitted application of psychometric diagnostic model called Fusion Model, and more recently, ROM model, to Language A, which was a prototype test of TOEFL designed to provide support for teachers and students. While the study features some positive outcomes of the given CDM and responses from users, I concluded with some warnings that test design based on traditional classical test theory or item response theory principles may not provide diagnostically reliable information due to a lack of diagnostic discrimination at upper and lower ability ranges and a lack of balanced item distribution across target skills. Where do I stand now? Honestly, I must say that I have a pragmatic turn in that retrofitted application of diagnosis modeling to existing testing programs is inevitable to some extent. But I think of it as a transition to the next era of assessment, and we have gained so much knowledge and experience from that application. Since 2005, I've had opportunities to retrofit CDM to K-12 achievement test, and more importantly, develop a new diagnostic assessment using the same principles. Like architecture, as you eloquently elaborated in one of many, many papers, Glenn, a test designed with a specific intended use. Proficiency test, whose primary goal is to discriminate among students for selection, are built upon the psychometric principles of normal distribution. Whereas K-12 standards-based achievement tests tend to serve as a minimum competency measure in which a score distribution tends to be negatively skewed. When CDMs retrofitted to these two different assessments, precision of diagnosis is being compromised differentially. Actually, my research team developed a new diagnostic assessment based on CDM principles, as I mentioned, and it shows the highest level of diagnostic discrimination compared to the two tests. Again, without retrofitting, we couldn't have learned what we now know about cognitive diagnosis assessment. And with that knowledge and skills, I believe we can now design operational diagnostic assessments.
And what do you think is the future for computer-based diagnostic assessment? Are researchers looking at automated diagnostics, or is it humans who are required to interpret the outcomes of computer-mediated tests?
Oh, this is the question I get excited most these days. Again, I approach the matter pragmatically. That is, what will maximize use? Immediacy or timeliness of diagnostic feedback is critical for maximizing its use. To this end, computerizing diagnostic assessment is so important. I think research-based design of diagnostic assessment and reliable diagnostic scoring modeling based on a representative sample would allow for automatized diagnostic profiling and feedback delivery. There's a growing interest in machine learning through pattern recognition algorithms to unsupervised assessment data, but I don't think it will replace human endeavors, as the diagnostic assessment of language learning and cognition should be grounded in mature theories and interpretations. I envision more active roles that humans can play in supporting the use of diagnostic information for furthering learning with an aid of computerized diagnostic assessment.
It's always difficult to cover a topic as broad as this in one podcast. So we could bring the podcast to an end with a little bit of speculation. Can you pick one or two ideas that you think we'll come back to again and again and will characterize the nature and scope of diagnostic assessment research in, say, the next 5 years? I know that's a difficult question, but perhaps you'd like to give it your best shot.
Well, it is indeed difficult. So instead of speculative prediction, I'd like to answer the question by sharing what I think will further advance diagnostic assessment. I think the use of diagnostic assessment for learning will and should be a recurring topic. Both teachers and learners need to experience positive changes as a result of diagnostic assessment, whether it's internally or externally developed. We need more empirical evidence accounting for the mechanism of change resulting from the use of diagnostic assessment. In addition, I like to see a methodological diversification of diagnostic assessment. CDMs, psychometrically powerful, I guess, yet presents many challenges due to its rigid psychometric assumptions to be met. And as a result, it is limiting in a small-scale local context of learning. I welcome research into psychometrically less constrained diagnosis model, such as latent class or profile analysis, clustering methods, or subscoring approaches. And there were some exciting presentations of research using such profiling approaches for diagnosis at this year's ITRC conference, for example, by Drs. Ari Huta and Charles Alderson. Lastly, I think there will be research in diagnosing the development of non-cognitive traits that interact with target language competencies. I feel traditional definitions about what's construct relevant or irrelevant will require some reconceptualization along with ever-evolving qualitative frameworks. As the interactionalist view of language assessment posits, diagnosing language ability should take into account various contextual and non-cognitive variables instead of controlling for their influences.
Well, Eunice, I'd like to thank you for joining us on Language Testing Bites and for staring in your crystal ball for us at the end. I'm sure that your paper in issue 32.3 and the others in the special issue will help define the research agenda for years to come. As we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, you have specialised in diagnostic assessment for many years, and I'm sure that our listeners will now rush off to download your article.
I hope so. Thank you so much, Glenn. It was such a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you for listening to this issue of Language Testing Bites. Language Testing Bites is a production of the journal Language Testing from Sage Publications. You can subscribe to Language Testing Bites through iTunes, or you can download future issues from ltj.sagepub.com or from languagetesting.info. So, until next time, we hope you enjoy the current issue of Language Testing.